Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutare Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namane Namaste Sarasate Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Pastyatya Desatarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Except for riding around in buses and getting stuck in traffic, this is going to be like one big festival, I think. It's like being at the holy places of South India and in Vrindavan at the same time. Well, the kirtan takes us to Vrindavan, and the 2 feet carry us to the place of sacred pastimes of the Lord. The appearance of Lord Nrisingadev and the pastimes of Lord Nrisingadev and the worship of Lord Nrisingadev is incomplete without the purpose behind Lord Nrisingadev's appearing. Discussing Prahlad Maharaj to protect his devotee. I remember asking the question, kind of like a naive young brahmachari bhakta, Prahlad Maharaj is so elevated. Even within the womb of his mother, Narada recognized this is a pure devotee. Don't touch him, don't harm him. So one question is, how did Narada, what capacity did Narada have to know? He didn't do a horoscope, he just knew that within the Kayadu's womb was a pure devotee. So besides, how did Narada know? Because he has the ability to know things we don't even know how he knows how to know things. But who was Prahlad Maharaj before he was Prahlad Maharaj? Just like Narada Muni, he described to Vyasadeva who he was before he was Narada Muni. So there's different ways of understanding who Prahlad Maharaj in his previous life. One way is from a description in his Prahlad describes his own situation that makes it sound like he descended from the spiritual world on behalf of the Lord to perform some service. This is Srimad Bhagavatam 7.10.3. Prahlad Maharaj says, "Oh, my worshipable Lord, because the seed of lusty desires, which is the root cause of material existence, is within the core of everyone's heart, you have sent me to this material world to exhibit the symptoms of a pure devotee." Sounds pretty clear. In commenting on this verse, Prabhupada, I've been listening to a series of lectures on the seventh canto, and some of those verses Prabhupada spoke in different places at different points in time, and so those are all stacked up together. On this verse, Prabhupada repeatedly says that Prahlad Maharaj was a Nitya Siddha Bhakta. We have these different categories. Nitya Siddha, Sadhana Siddha, and Kripa Siddha. Nitya Siddha is eternally perfect. Prabhupada was saying, Prahlad Maharaj was such a devotee. Eternally perfect. They never fall down. So, by his appearance, he was instructing, here's the life of a pure devotee of the Lord. However, there are other descriptions found in the Puranas that are referenced by our acharyas, where Prahlad Maharaj in his previous life was a Brahmana. So, to reconcile these two, I'm going to describe in a moment, but there may be different appearances of Prahlad, and he appears in different ways at different times, because Lord Nrisingadev regularly appears, and with him or before him comes Prahlad. So Prahlad Maharaj was a Brahmana who had a Brahmani girlfriend, and they weren't married, and they were walking through the forest together. And in his previous life, we'll say Prahlad in his previous life wanted to enjoy together with this Brahmani, his girlfriend. And so to sit down in a clean place, they found some abandoned structure out in the forest, and they cleaned a place to sit down. And something happened, and the girl became angry, and she got up and left. And Prahlad in his previous life became very unhappy. She left me. Whoa, she left me. And he fasted the whole day. And he fasted the whole night. And it turns out it was an Ekadasi day, and he was fasting the whole day and the whole night. And it turns out the place where he was planning to sit and conduct his romantic activities with the Brahmani was a former altar where Lord Nrisingadev was worshipped, and he made the place clean. But then, on the other hand, his intention was something not so nice to do on Lord Nrisingadev's altar. And so, for that offense to Lord Nrisingadev, he took birth as Prahlad. But because he was observing Ekadasi very strictly, this is some Ekadasi Mahatmya description in the Puranas, and because he did some seva for Lord Nrisingadev, unknowingly, agyata sukriti, he cleaned the altar. Mandir marjanado. With a different intention, but he cleansed the altar. So he received this birth as the son of Hiranyakashipu, but from his very, before he even did anything, bad or good, before he was even born, he was a very elevated personality. And in one of the verses, he describes the presence of material desire within the heart, within his heart. Speak a little bit before that about fear and fearlessness. Lakshmi, when she saw the form of Lord Nrisingadev, she felt fear. Here's the verse. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmiji, was requested to go before the Lord by all the demigods present, who, because of fear, could not do so. Very next sentence. But she had never even seen such a wonderful and extraordinary form of the Lord, and thus she could not approach him. In Prabhupada's commentary, in verse after verse, the different places, he explains that Lakshmi is very chaste, and she wasn't sure, is this my husband? And because of fear of violating her position as a chaste wife, she couldn't approach. It's not my husband. Or at least I'm not sure it's my husband. I've never seen this. She wasn't specifically afraid of the feature that he was showing. She was afraid of violating her position, of transgressing her position, of being faithful and chaste. But then later, Prahlad describes his position of fearlessness. And it's very graphic. He says, "My Lord, who are never conquered by anyone, Ajita, I am certainly not afraid of your ferocious mouth and tongue." It's described his tongue was moving back and forth. Razor sharp tongue and the teeth of a lion. Your bright eyes, as bright as the sun, and your frowning eyebrows. Sounds fearful already, just reading the description. I do not fear your sharp pinching teeth. Your garland of intestines. Yuck. Your mane soaked with blood. Or your high wedge-like ears. Like a cat that's going to pounce on a mouse or something. And their ears go up like that. Eyes as red as the sun. Mane drenched in blood. Garland, can you imagine? Garland of intestines. Pinching teeth. Not just sharp teeth, but like, and his tongue is moving back and forth like a sharp razor. Nor do I fear your tumultuous roaring, which makes elephants flee to distant places, or your nails, which are meant to kill your enemies. He wasn't afraid. Sounds fearful, but he wasn't afraid. Why wasn't he afraid? Because he knew that those features were meant for the non-devotees like Hiranyakashipu. The very next verse, he says what he is afraid of. Oh, most powerful, insurmountable Lord, who are kind to the fallen souls, I have been put into the association of demons as a result of my activities. Doesn't sound like an avatar who descends from the spiritual world with some mission. And therefore, I am very much afraid of my condition of life within this material world. When will that moment come when you will call me to the shelter of your lotus feet, which are the ultimate goal for liberation from conditional life? He's afraid of his material desires. He's not saying, you know, I don't have any, but I'm, you know, like those people that do, they should be afraid. He's saying he's afraid. Now we can take it that he's like a great acharya that's speaking about himself as a conditioned soul when he isn't, for the purpose of our instruction. or we can take it that he means what he says, that by his past activities he's taken this birth. Most unfortunate birth. O Great One, O Supreme Lord, because of combination with pleasing and displeasing circumstances, and because of separation from them, one is placed in a most regrettable position within heaven or hellish planets, as if in a burning fire of lamentation. Although there are many remedies by which to get out of miserable life, any such remedies in the material world are more miserable than the miseries themselves. Therefore, I think that the only remedy is to engage in your service. Kindly instruct me in such service. Prahlad Maharaj his stage of perfection, or the nine processes of bhakti that Prahlad Maharaj achieved or exhibited, the form of spiritual perfection, was remembrance, Vishnu Smaranam. He remembered even what he heard in the womb, and he was able to say it back again to his classmates, to his father, to anyone. Later on, Prahlad Maharaj speaks it to Lord Nrisimhadeva, just because of having heard from Narada, just from hearing. From hearing, our hearing requires more than once, certainly more than just hearing in the womb. And from that hearing, then gradually, the stage of awakening of our dormant spiritual consciousness, that kind of remembrance, not memorization or, you know, rote recitation having memorized something, but the awakening state of spiritual consciousness. That's what comes from proper hearing. And as a result of that constant remembrance, Prahlad was protected. He was fearless, and he was, the phrase that's used, or the term that's used, is saralata, that he was very simple and direct when Hiranyakashipu asked him, what's the best thing that you've learned in school? He told them, I didn't learn anything good in school, but there is one good thing that I can tell you. Process of devotional service. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam. All in relation to Vishnu. Service unto the Supreme Lord Vishnu. And by serving the Supreme Lord Vishnu, that's the best thing. One can achieve all good things just from that one thing. The position of fearlessness is the position of full spiritual conception, having taken shelter exclusively in the supreme, pure personality of Godhead. That's the position of fearlessness. We'll say it in reverse. There's no question of fearlessness if one is holding on to a material conception of life. No question of fearlessness. If someone says, fearless, it's a bluff. At best. Let's take the spiritual conception of violence and nonviolence. We normally think of nonviolent is you don't bring physical harm to another person, you're nonviolent. But Prabhupada gives us a spiritual conception of nonviolence. The spiritual conception of nonviolence is that you deliver souls from the path of birth and death by transcendental knowledge. That's nonviolence, and failing to do so is violence. Say it the other way. Failing to present, you have the means to deliver a soul from the cycle of birth and death, and you don't deliver it, they're suffering. They're terribly suffering in the material condition, and you just don't administer that knowledge. Prabhupada's example is a physician is walking down the street carrying his little black medicine bag. Do you have black medicine bags here in India? Yes? Okay. So it's worldwide. He's walking down the street with his black medicine bag. And he sees somebody writhing on the street in pain. Oh, doctor, help. And the doctor just keeps walking. He has the means to administer something to relieve the person from his pain and suffering. He doesn't do it. Why? It's violence. Perpetrating or extending someone's suffering condition. Nonviolence is to administer. Nonviolence from the spiritual conception is to administer that knowledge, give transcendental knowledge to people in general. And the means of realizing that transcendental knowledge through the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. And just like we were hearing a bit before, of receiving in a systematic way this transcendental teaching. Or I've just been reading another example of the same thing. I've just been reading in the third canto about Maitreya, who was in the same forest where Krishna was speaking to Uddhava. Maitreya firsthand heard Krishna speak Uddhava Gita. And Krishna told Maitreya, very soon Vidura is going to come and I want you to explain to him everything that you've heard from me. Specific succession, in other words. So, fast forward, and Vidura comes before Maitreya. And there's Maitreya at the feet, Vidura at the feet of Maitreya, and he's asking him many questions. First he asks him about the Lord's process of creation and how he creates and then enters within that which he creates. He answers the question of Vidura, and hearing Maitreya's answer, Vidura asks further questions. Without the detail of which questions he asks, Maitreya responds by saying, I would be unchaste if I didn't answer your question as I heard it from authorities. I mean, the authority that he heard from was Krishna. So one sense of indisciplic succession to maintain chastity or faithfulness to the line of disciplic succession is you only express that which you've heard in disciplic succession. That's a standard sense of being faithful or chaste. But the way that he's expressing it and the way that Srila Prabhupada, and he's quoting other acharyas as explaining, is that he would be unchaste if he didn't express what he heard, if he just like went off in solitary bhajan somewhere and didn't express. It's part of chastity or faithfulness to express that which you have heard from authorities. Not to express other things, but to express that which you have heard from authorities. It's part of our faithfulness. And similarly, fearlessness. Fearlessness can mean, I'm not afraid of anybody or anything. Look out, here I come. False ego. And the spiritual conception is, I feel fully protected because there's nothing that I have to hide. Why is it that people become afraid? Something that they have might be taken from them. Something that they value that might be taken from them. And therefore they're afraid. Ultimately, it's the bodily conception that says, I'm afraid of losing my body. But one can also be afraid of losing things connected to the body. But supposing you don't have any identification with matter, you have a truly spiritual conception of your identity. What is it that you have fear of? When we go further south, we're going to hear about Krish, great devotee of Ramanujacharya, and his wife. Minus the long description of their life, they were fabulously wealthy. And they used their wealth in charity for all the people from the early crack of dawn in the morning, as soon as the light of the sun rose, until the evening when the sun set, their big gate opened, and then their big gate closed to provide whatever they had to their capacity to anybody that came to their gate or their big palace. Lakshmi, the deity by the side of Varadaraj, came to hear of this Kuresh's magnanimity. So she spoke to the pujari and said, I'd like to meet Kuresh. Can you bring him here so I can see him? So the pujari delivered the message to Kuresh, who felt very shamed. He didn't feel great joy. He was feeling, I'm being honored for this mundane activity of helping people in the bodily conception of life, and for that people want to honor me and praise me. My dear wife, let's just give all of this up at once. And he, within the same day, by the evening of the next day, he had given everything. He was called Kuresha because he was a great landholder, Isha, of this place, this tract of land called Kuru, so called Kuresha. He distributed all the land, all of his wealth, his house, his property, and left with just one cloth and his wife having one cloth. And they were on their way to visit or to take shelter in Sri Rangam and just serve the Lord there in simplicity without the opulence. And as they were traveling, his wife, it was in the forest, in the dark of night, and she expressed to her husband some fear. He said, what is it you have to be afraid of? Have you maintained some valuables? And she said, well, only one thing, a golden bowl, just so I could serve you your meals. Aha! That's why you're afraid. Because you've held on to this piece of gold and someone may come and take it from you. And he flung it as far as he could into the forest. And they went on, fearless. Fear is when we're holding on to something. It's temporal. We know it's going to be taken from us tomorrow or the next day, if not today. Here today, gone tomorrow. But we're afraid that we may lose this temporary thing. And we will lose this temporary thing. And so, in this world, there's fear. And the position of fearlessness is there's no material shelter. Krishna Eka Sharana. Shelter in Krishna alone. It doesn't mean that you have to become destitute to become fearless. It means that there's no material shelter. That which you hold to be near and dear and of cherished value to you, of this temporal realm. Sanatan Goswami and his gold coins, when Ishan was helping him cross the ramparts, and he could understand Ishan, do you have any? You are to distribute all the gold to the king, or to the innkeeper. Did you keep something? Do you still have some gold coins? I have 2 gold coins. Just for emergency. These are descriptions of literally giving things up. But it's not that that's not the requirement. Practically speaking, the requirement is giving up the sense of shelter, safety, well-being, happiness, enjoyment in temporary things. And without that, there's not going to be fearlessness. Prahlad was fearless. He could speak so directly this principle of simplicity or straightforwardness, saralata, nice term, which means one's very direct and honest and straightforward in their dealings. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in that essay on Brahmanism and Vaishnavism, on the Brahmana section, it kind of a strain that runs throughout where he explains this is the foremost quality of a Brahmana. They're being simple and straightforward as opposed to crooked. So Brahmana and Kripana, the miser. The miser is one who holds on to something. And Brahmana is, they don't hold on to something because they have knowledge of Brahman. And without that, it's mere speculation. One can't possibly know that which is beyond the material. You're holding on to the material. You can't. So a Brahmana is very straightforward. And he tells the story from the Upanishads of Satyakama, Jabala, the Shudra, that wished to become a disciple of Gotama. You know the story. He asked his mother, I want to become a disciple of Gotama. So he went to Gotama's ashram. Gotama said, you'd like to become my disciple, can you tell me what is your gotra? And the young man said, I don't know. And he said, well, go ask your mother, then come back. So he went to his mother and said, Gotama Rishi asked me, please let me know, what is your gotra? And his mother said, I'm very embarrassed to tell you, but I don't know. I've been with so many men. I don't know who is your father. But you can say that your name, given name is Satyakama, and my name is Jabala, so your name is Satyakama Jabala. So he went back and told Gotama everything that his mother said. And Gotama said, very well, I accept you as a disciple because you're straightforward and honest. Because only one who is straightforward and honest can say all the things that you just said about yourself. And your first order of service is you go gather wood for the fire and never depart from the truth. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur refers to this from the Upanishads as a declaration that the foremost quality of a Brahmana is that they're straightforward and honest in their dealings. Even where it looks like you're going to compromise yourself in some way, you don't look at that, you speak in a straightforward, direct manner. That's Brahmana. And that was Prahlad. He told his father exactly what was valuable and said, everything that I'm hearing from my teachers, it's worthless. But here is something valuable. And then when his father got really angry and said, where did you learn this? His reply is, don't worry, Father, you won't learn it. It won't be possible for you to learn it, neither by your own effort or the assistance of others helping you or a combination of the two. So don't worry. No problem for you.
Very direct.
I mean, it sounds like an insult that he's just speaking the truth. And his father became very angry. And his father became very afraid. His father was thinking, if this young boy grows up, I've got a competitor right in the family. And Vishnu has killed my brother, Hiranyaksha. I have to destroy him now before he grows up. It's the same way that Indra was thinking. We have to destroy this child that's in the womb of Kayadu, because when he's born and he grows up, he'll be Hiranyakashipu Jr. Afraid. As long as one is holding on to a material conception of life, there'll be fear. And the position of fearlessness is the position where there's no longer a material conception of life. That means who we are and what we do with the life that we have. It's for Krishna's service. And Prahlad says that after saying his teachings are very wonderful. He's already said, I read it, that as long as there are material desires in the heart, which are the root cause of material existence, one will stay bound and suffer in material existence. But then he's saying, you've sent me into this material world to show the example of a pure devotee. Then he describes what the position of a pure devotee is. A servant who desires material profits from his master is certainly not a qualified servant or a pure devotee. So, first describing what a pure devotee isn't. But then he also says, and a master who fulfills the desires of a servant simply so that he can maintain his position as a master, that's not a qualified master either. Oh my Lord, I am your unmotivated servant, and you are my eternal master. There is no need of our being anything other than master and servant. Like, you know, squeaky clean. There's nothing else going on between us. I'll scratch your back, you scratch my back. Oh, a little bit over to the right, please. None of that. You are naturally my master, and I am naturally your servant. We have no other relationship. That's our relationship. And you want to give me a benediction. Sounds like something other than the relationship of servant and master. You want to give me a benediction. If you would all want to bestow a desirable benediction upon me, then I pray from your lordship that within the core of my heart there be no material desires. Like, you know, the famous stamba at the the fellow that he wanted me to, like, you know, get into it, so they had that cloth and he tied me to the stamba, you know, wrap your arms around it and pray for something. Pure devotional service. Huh? I asked him. He spoke a little English. I said, do people ever pray for, like, you know, a heart that has no material desires? Huh? Maybe it was because he didn't understand English, but maybe it was also because he normally isn't asked that question. But that's Prahlad's prayer. If there's one benediction, if you really, really want to give me a benediction, take all material desire. Let my heart become free from material desire. Because what is the definition of material or spiritual? Simple definition. Spiritual means in relation to Krishna. Material means forgetful of the relationship with Krishna. Simple definition. Just hearing a lecture during lunch prasadam from Prabhupada was speaking in Montreal in 1968. Like, you know, very, very beginning of the Hare Krishna movement. And somebody was asking about the mind. And is the mind part of the soul? Or is the mind something material? And Prabhupada said, the mind is part of the soul. The soul has thinking, feeling, willing. The soul has intelligence. The soul has ego. Aham Brahmasmi, there's a sense of who I am. So then the person said, so that means the mind is spiritual. He hit like, it was in disbelief, like, mind is spiritual. And then Prabhupada was saying, it depends on how the mind is used. The mind that thinks of Krishna, that's spiritual. And the mind that thinks of independently of Krishna, that's material. That's the covering, that's Maya. But actually, the capacity to think is inherent to the soul, and there's a covering. The material energy supplies a material mind when we don't think of Krishna. We think of other than Krishna, or seeing things in relation to Krishna separate from Krishna. It's Maya. So where there's no material desire means there's only spiritual desire. Desire is natural for the soul. To desire Krishna's shelter only, to desire to see all things and utilize all things in relation to Krishna. If you want to give me some benediction, there's a nice benediction. Oh my Lord, because of my lusty desires, from the very beginning, because of lusty desires from the very beginning of one's birth, the functions of one's senses, mind, life, body, religion, patience, intelligence, shyness, opulence, strength, memory, and truthfulness are vanquished, vinashati. O Lord, when a human being is able to give up all the material desires in his mind, he becomes eligible to possess wealth and opulence like yours. Hey, sounds like a good program. Wealth and opulence like Krishna's. Dive in. Sridhara Swami comments on this verse and says, wait a minute. If the promise is, I just like become the Lord's devotee, unalloyed devotee, and I have opulence and powers like the Lord, then why would one want to take this humbling, menial position of being a servant if you're going to have opulence and powers like the Lord? And he answers his own question. It's not that one becomes equal to him. Rather, the position of servant and master continues, just like Prahlad is saying. Although in the spiritual world, the servant is equally as opulent as the master. The servant of the Lord is engaged in the service of the Lord in different rasas, servant, friend, father, mother, conjugal lover, all of whom are equally opulent as the Lord. This is achintya bheda, abheda tattva. The master and the servant are different yet equal in opulence. And then finally, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, hearing Prahlad Maharaj give a nice little Srimad Bhagavatam class, or expressing what it means to be a pure devotee and aspiring for that position, please free my heart from material desire. He said, my dear Prahlad, a devotee like you never desires any kind of material opulences, either in this life or the next. Nevertheless, I order you to enjoy the opulences of the demons in this material world, acting as their king until the end of the duration of time occupied by Manu. Sounds like a prison sentence. Very much like Dhruva, he was also ordered by the Lord to maintain the kingdom of his father, Uttanapada, for 60,000 years. But this isn't 60,000 years. This is for the duration of the life of Manu. And Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, they were at the very beginning of Satyayuga. Poor Prahlad. But without attraction for those things, it's not a problem. For his father, Hiranyakashipu, was a big problem because he wanted to be the enjoyer of those things. And because he wanted to be the enjoyer, he had fear. And he was misusing his opulences and power. He was duskriti. This is the opposite, sukriti. On the strength of having taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and having no fear, for having no attraction, not even a spirit, not even a material conception of being an independent enjoyer. Because of that quality of Prahlad, he was protected. His protection, just like we were discussing this afternoon, whenever it was, different types of protection, protection from one's material desires. He was being protected like that. He wanted no material desires. He was praying to the Lord for no material desires. He was protected from material desires. So whether he had become a pure devotee or he was a descended pure devotee from Vaikuntha, he had no material desire. And the Lord becomes the protector of one who aspires like that. That's our practice in devotional service. Nadhanam, nadjanam, nasundarim, kavitam, va, jagadisha, kamaye, mama janmani janmanishware bhavatad bhaktir haituki twai. This is Lord Chaitanya's teaching connected with the chanting of the holy name. We should desire like that. And when we approach he who takes away those desires, he'll take away those desires. And when he takes away those desires, don't start screaming. Wait a minute, not that one. Take away the other one. That one's very special to me, very dear. It happens. It happens. Because we're attached. And because we're attached, we suffer. And we have fears and anxieties and lust and greed and all the enemies of the conditioned soul. Although we're striving on the path of devotion to become free from those conditions. Become free from those conditions, we become free from desire. So following the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj, that's how we can get to that position. He's giving very nice instructions. Although they're in the form of prayers to Lord Nrisimhadev, he's instructing us how to come to that position of devotional service. So what's our schedule? Okay. Any comments or questions? Subal. Yeah, you won't disclose the truth. Yeah. It starts from within side. And if it's not clear inside, it's not going to be clear outside. And if it's clear inside, it'll be clear outside. So we can practice, we can cultivate, but it will be possible only when we have shelter. will we feel safe with a clean heart? Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The narration is said, there is great power in observing Ekadasi, strictly. That's the context of the narration. Just like the Ajamila description, the context is how, the power of chanting the holy name, even in Abbas form. So even unintentionally, he observed Ekadasi very strictly. So what to speak of one who's strictly? It's very powerful. It's a powerful opportunity for Vaishnavas, practicing Vaishnavas, that's us, to progress, to become dear to the Lord and become spiritually qualified, observing different appropriate vratas on Ekadasi. So because of that, he was blessed by the Lord. I can't hear you. So his question is, Dhruva Maharaj had material desire, Prahlad Maharaj in his previous life had material desire. What's the similarity and difference between the two? The answer is Narada Muni in both. One who receives the mercy of a pure devotee. In Dhruva's case, you know, that wasn't... There was a deep... Especially in Dhruva's case, there was a deep sense of gratitude. But to Narada. When he first... Narada was giving him, no, let's do it later. No, you're too young. No, it's too difficult. And when Narada saw that Dhruva was very determined, he gave him the means to achieve spiritual perfection. Dhruva was very grateful. And that gratitude grew and grew and grew and displaced the material desire. That became the motivation for his vrata, his practice. To fulfill that gift which Narada had given him. The fullness of that gift. It displaced the material desire. And in Prahlad's case, Narada instructed. He was instructing Kayadu, but Narada knew what was going on. Kayadu, when Hiranyakashipu comes back, she'll forget. But the child within the womb received Narada's blessing. He was unique. He recognized that was the living entity between the two of them, the mother and the child, that he was giving his special mercy to. She could have had it also equally, but that wasn't her disposition. All right? Yes? Say it again? No. Faith originates from the soul. Faith originates from the soul. It's intrinsic to the soul. If you're saying the soul in its pure state also has mind and the contemplations of the mind in its pure state is faith, okay. But it emanates from the soul. Well, there's the conditioned mind and the spiritual mind. Which one are we speaking about? Because if it's the conditioned mind, then it's according to the modes of material nature. One has faith. And if it's beyond the material modes of nature, then it's faith in Krishna. And we're like in a, conditioned souls are in a mixed position. Some faith in Krishna, some faith in, material energy, according to the modes of nature that we're influenced by. And the mind carries that conception. But in the purified state, it's the soul. I gave that example from Chaitanya Bhagavat today when Haridas Thakur was ordered to give up chanting the Maha Mantra and instead take up your religious practices. He said, I can't stop. I can't help myself. And you can't stop me either. Cut up my body in little pieces and I'll still continue chanting. It's coming from the soul. Faith is of the soul. The mind is an instrument. Anything else? This is one reason that we don't have children come to yatras and pilgrimages. And parents not to blame, it's just the child can't be anything but a child. Yes. Something that's temporal. Bodies are temporal. There's other things that are temporal. Your money. Whatever there is that's here today and gone tomorrow. It's temporal. While you have it, you use it. If Krishna wants to take it, what good is your fear going to do? And Krishna wants to protect you, who can harm it? We don't do foolish things with that understanding, but Krishna is our protector. This is one of the symptoms of surrender. On the spiritual platform, the symptom of surrender is, Krishna, you're my protector. Because protection is very important. It's an animal propensity. It's the strongest, we said, mentioned, the strongest of the animal propensities. But who is stronger than Krishna? And if I'm taking shelter of Krishna, who can harm me? She had never seen that form before. That's what it says. Anything else? Yes. Holding on to them. They're very dear to us. There are means to enjoy, so we hold on to our material conceptions. Even we know it's killing us. But we're, you know, the determination to be enjoyers separate from Krishna is very strong. That's material conception. I can enjoy separate from Krishna. Try to find a good reason and you can't. It's quite unreasonable. There is no good reason, and we do it. We're in Maya. Anything else? Okay. Yes. The very last part you said real fast. Don't repeat the first part. What's the last part? Well, if you remember the instructions of the spiritual master, let me ask you a question. This is Prabhupada's statement. Is it possible, or question to a disciple, is it possible to think of Krishna separate from the spiritual master, or think the spiritual master separate from Krishna? There's the answer to your question. If you're thinking of the instructions of the spiritual master, right behind the spiritual master, there's Krishna. And if you're thinking of Krishna, connected to this Krishna is the spiritual master. And the constant remembrance of the instructions of the spiritual master is, one sense is, I want out of here, but a higher sense is a sense of love. I know I don't like to suffer, I don't want to be punished, I want to be happy, I don't want to be miserable. This is my means to get out of misery and get to happiness, so I'll remember. Until we become complacent when we're like, you know, feeling comfortable again. So higher is the position of love. And out of position of love, then you remember the person, you remember the words of the person, and you know, all there is to know about the person because of love. And through that medium of love of the spiritual master comes love for Krishna. They're inseparable. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Lord Nrisimhadev ki jai.